101.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. You are listening to Next Step 4, which is a program that highlights millennials in the KC Metro that are using their businesses, gifts, talents, activism to promote positivity in the community. I have a special guest here with me today, Mr. John Welchin. First, I'm your host, Jasmine Jones. My guest today is John Welchin. John is a financial advisor with Northwestern Mutual, whose mission is to develop enduring relationships with clients by providing expert guidance for a lifetime of financial security. John, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I am well. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so had lots of questions. We're going to try to start out a little slow, and then we're going to jump into the meat and potatoes, as they call it.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so first, what is a financial advisor? Like, I know the title would be considered self-explanatory, but what exactly does a financial advisor do? What does it all entail?
A financial advisor is really broad. Things that we do are help give you financial advice. We financial planning, retirement planning. We plan based off of your goals and objectives, whether they're short, mid-term, or long-term goals. We provide advice, give you access and to other investment options that may not be readily available to you. Also, just, you know, help, you know, most important things, help grow your money.
Like that. How did you get started being a financial advisor? Well, have you always wanted to do that? Is it something you kind of just fell into?
I would probably say it started back in high school. I've always loved numbers and always loved helping individuals. I actually took college math back in high school.
Like as a choice?
Yeah, I actually got it's actually an interesting story. My freshman year math teacher actually recommended me go to summer school to take my 10th grade math class. So my sophomore year, I came and took my junior math class, and then my junior year actually took some college credit class. For me, it was, you know, to me, a financial advisor, I really love working with numbers, love working with data, analyzing everyone's situation, just because everyone's situation is different. We do I personally do customized planning based off of your objectives. I grew up in the Kansas City area, born at KCK. Yes, proud. Born off of 13th and Quindaro originally. I take pride in that. I've always had the mentality that you got to know where you're from to get where you're going. One thing that I noticed, especially in our community, that was lacking was financial literacy and financial education. So I kind of took the initiative to, within the last couple of years, to kind of start my own financial planning practice. I've been in the finance industry really since out of high school. Started off in banking as a banker, ventured out to investment accounting as a fund administrator, then transitioned to plan sponsors. Those are going to be your 401k company. I was a business process analyst there. Then went back to banking for a little bit and bank operation, then transitioned into real estate investing. Then over the last, you know, last year when I completed my master's in March of 2020, actually 2020, actually not last year, I really got the bug. And to me, I saw that there was something missing, especially in our community. And I wanted to make a change and really communicate and, you know, be an advocate and a tool and a resource for my community. We are not our parents' generation and our grandparents.
Right.
So today in 2022, there's really no excuse for you not really having a financial plan, and I wanted to target a demographic that is historically ignored. And I'm actually happy, very satisfied with the results. I'm meeting a lot of great individuals, and it's been a great, you know, great journey.
Cool. So why financial advising versus like accounting, since you know, have a love for numbers and the analytics of it all? So what made you decide to do advising versus accounting?
Accounting to me is not my forte. I like meeting people and I like to really plan. I really like to challenge not only myself but also the client. Accounting is just more so, you know, strictly numbers, giving them maybe a little bit of advice, you know, tax advice if you become a CPA. But for me, my passion and my thrill was actually planning for my clients, being able to put them in a position where they have financial freedom, but also kind of create some generational wealth. You know, one thing I like to say to my clients is I like to break generational curses to create generational blessings.
I like that. Say that again for the people in the back.
Breaking generational curses to create generational blessings.
Okay. All right. So we're starting out where everybody's like, I want to get rich and all this stuff like that. And you're like, okay, I want to have a better finance or a better handle on my finances. I want to create that generational wealth. I want to do this. I want to invest all these different things. Where do we even start with having a better handle on our finances? Like, what's the beginning step, I guess, to get that handle that we all want?
I would say it's between two things. Mm-hmm. First thing is identifying your objective.
Okay.
You know, what are you trying to do? And then the second part is budgeting.
Okay.
With my clients, that's the first thing we do the first time we meet. We go over budget. I want to see where the money's going towards. That's usually going to be one of my first recommendations.
Okay.
Tracking your expenses is critical because that lets you know how much money you can save.
So tracking your expenses, should you do an Excel? Should you have like a particular program, or do you have any recommendations on how we need to track our expenses? Does it matter as long as you're tracking it?
I would say it really depends on an individual.
Okay.
I have a lot of clients that track their expenses, you know, the old school method with Excel.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, in 2020, there's a lot of different software out there that actually allows you to track your expenses. Some of them are free, some of them you pay for. There's a lot of financial applications in your app store of your phone that you're able to utilize and track your spending and be able to categorize those expenses. Typically, really, people don't have a good grasp on the amount of money going out.
Mm.
You know, one of the biggest blessings and biggest curses is the debit card. You know, it's great because we have immediate access to our funds. However, it can be a detriment if we don't have that restraint.
Mm. So restraint, we'll get to that later. But first there's been a lot of myths about financial advising. One of which that I personally thought was, well, I'm not rich. Why do I need a financial advisor? I don't have no money. What are they going to advise me on? I don't have any money to be advised.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've gotten older and a little wiser, that's not necessarily true. So can you kind of explain why that's not true? Do you know how that myth got started? And then kind of just, I guess, dispel the myth in general?
I would probably, in my personal opinion, I would probably say it has to do with how we develop as a country. Maybe when you go back 50, 60, 70 years,
mm-hmm.
people who typically invested were people who had money. A lot of individuals back then did not have a lot of discretionary income to be able to put money back. They only had enough to really live, you know, provide for their everyday expenses.
Gotcha.
So the myth, I would probably say, is just people in general, back then you would have to have money, but today in 2022, I would probably disagree with that because there's so many different advisors out there that will meet with you, even if you don't have as much.
Is there a fee involved?
Typically, it really depends on that advisor.
Okay.
You have some fee-based advisors. I'm actually not. You know, determine on the level of client that you're working with, you may find an advisor who has a fee-based practice, but those are usually designed maybe around high-value clients.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, most advisors are not fee-based advisors.
Okay, good. I think that's good to know because I think a lot of people shy away from getting assistance in general, whether it be mental or financial, mm-hmm. or remote, whatever, because of the cost involved. So we're going to jump to some questions because we're already almost halfway through the show.
Okay.
So I put a poll out there on social media, just, you know, if they had any questions to ask, and got a pretty good response. So one of the question was talking about your restraint. It was, how do you save for the future but still treat yourself? So how would one do that?
That's a great question. How I typically like to describe is I like to live by the 50-30-20 method.
Okay.
50% of your income goes based off of your fixed expense to pay pretty much all your fixed expense, which includes your mortgage, your car loan, all your daily expenses. 20% is more so what I utilize, what I save. Mm-hmm. So you want to get to a position where you're able to save 20%. However, a lot of people, especially in today's society, because we live in a capitalism society and we spend, mm-hmm. that's difficult. You know, but I always like to advise, let's start somewhere and let's build up towards it.
So even if it's like $10?
Anything helps.
Okay.
I would also say don't focus too much on the amount that you put back. Because if you're just starting, you're starting a new habit. It's something that you wasn't doing.
Uh-huh.
So technically speaking, if you're putting money back this year and you wasn't doing it in prior years, you're already ahead. And then build yourself up. Don't feel like you need to start at an exorbitant amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
No, let's take baby steps. You know, one thing I like to also say to my clients is let's start off with crumbs, because we know in the end we're going to have a loaf.
Ooh, okay. Starting off with crumbs so you can have a loaf. Mm-hmm. Like it. So it's basically just based on what you are able to do, and what you're going to be able to save is based off the budget that was set from the very start.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, when you look at the budget, that really tells you where the money's going towards.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someone has a little bit too much discretionary spending. Maybe we're spending too much money. For an example, one thing I always see when I do a budget is car insurance.
Mm-hmm.
People typically overpaying car insurance. That is usually one of the first recommendations that I tell people, like, hey, you do know you're overspending. And the reason how I come to learn that is throughout experience.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of working with different brokers out there, kind of figuring out what are typical rates. And, you know, just again, using car insurance as an example, you're overspending. Another thing is, you know, I would say probably the top three expenses that I see with clients in this order definitely will probably be rent or mortgage, depending on which one you have.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, surprisingly, dining out.
Really?
Yes. A lot of people spend too much money dining out. I see people spending $500-$700 dining out.
What?
And we haven't even looked at the amount that they're spending in groceries. So that's also another way that you can look at it's actually money that's going out that you can reposition and repurpose.
Mm.
So that's also kind of goes with the mindset of actually starting a budget and why it's important. And I would say the third expense is probably going to be your car.
Okay.
Two of them are more so needs. You know, however, even when it comes to car, you don't need to go out there and buy a brand new car. You don't need to go out there and spend $500 or $600 or $700 just to accumulate some debt, especially if you don't have an emergency savings.
Mm.
If you do not have any cash in your bank, we shouldn't be going out there purchasing cars if we don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do understand there are situations where we have to go out there and add debt. But if we don't have to, let's be smart about our money, because that's money that you could typically be putting back for your retirement. You know, for an example, do you plan on being old? You know, you plan on getting up there.
Unfortunately, yes.
So you have to get in that mindset, like, hey, what am I going to do when, you know, in 65, 70?
Okay.
Does it really make sense for me to go purchase, you know, this big ticket item just to impress people, or because it quote unquote makes me feel good? Well, you're probably going to recommend, you know, you're probably going to regret it in your older years, just because you start realizing how much money you went through.
Mm. So in terms of being able to treat yourself, it's more about, you can, but as long as it's within your budget is,
yes,
what I'm getting.
Yes. So, you know, I always like to designate maybe 30% for discretionary.
Okay.
But that also means that you don't have to necessarily go out there and spend all 30% of that.
Gotcha.
You know, we work and we want to be able to enjoy the fruit of our labors.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important that you treat yourself. However, in order for you to get to the next level, you have to make sacrifices. And in those sacrifices, really, you know, can really tell if a person is really serious.
Mm.
Like I said, even starting off repositioning $50, $100 a month, that's starting.
Okay. So for everybody out there, you can treat yourself, just don't get crazy.
Yeah, don't get crazy. Don't feel like you got to take a $5,000 trip vacation and you don't
unless
have...
Unless you got it like that.
Yes. Yes. You know, just because you know, having cash in that emergency surplus that you have in your bank is very important. Mm-hmm. And it also is a peace of mind. You know, typically speaking, I like to tell my clients, I recommend that you want to have at least 3 to 6 months of expenses. Mm-hmm. The reason why is if we ever lose our income, we have something that we can depend on for 3 to 6 months.
But that does that go back to, because when I hear, oh, you need to have 3 to 6 months of expenses saved up, it's like, no, where am I supposed to get that money?
You save it up little by little.
Okay.
And that's the key is starting.
That's the crumbs that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Because let's just say, you know, we have someone with the income of $3,000, mm-hmm. and their expenses, including discretionary expenses, may be $2,500.
Okay.
You got $500 left over. I'm not saying throw $250 into your account, but that would be beneficial for you. But maybe you throw $50 in there. Mm-hmm. Something is better than nothing.
Okay.
And then once you get into the mindset of putting money back, it becomes easier over time to increase it because you're already used to it.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. You have been listening to Next Step Forward, which is a program that highlights millennials in the KC Metro that are using their talents, businesses, activism to educate and uplift their communities. We've been speaking with John Welchin about finances and saving. Stay with us. We'll be right back. FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. You are listening to Next Step Forward, which is a show that highlights millennials in the KC Metro that are using their gifts, businesses, talents, etc. to promote promote positivity and educate their communities. I'm speaking with John Welchin, who is a financial advisor with Northwestern Mutual, whose mission is to develop enduring relationships with clients by providing expert guidance for a lifetime of financial security. Before the break, we were talking about saving and just different tactics to be able to, you know, save for a rainy day, but still treat yourself. And so we talked about being able to make sacrifices and kind of have that, I guess, discipline to be able to say, yeah, I want to do this, but I'm not because it's not in my budget or whatever the case may be. So another question we had was a lot of people want to know about investments. But before we get to investments, there was one that I thought was pretty interesting that was asking, what is the best way to save or set aside or invest money for a special needs child that will not affect their government-funded medical assistance when they are adults?
Wonderful question. This is something that we're actually seeing an increase with in 2022. Mm-hmm. Back in 2016, Obama actually passed the ABLE account.
Okay.
And it's actually an account that you're able to set up for your kids to be able to put money back for them to help pay for future expenses. Currently, right now, you have to be under 26. So you have to be 26 years old and under, which the account has to be set up before then. You're able to put back at least $100,000 that will not be will not affect your SSI or Medicaid benefits. The beautiful part about that is, you know, that's going to be a great tool just because if you do have a child with special needs, that is something that a lot of parents are concerned about, is those future costs, especially when they're not here. Anything after $100,000, they will factor in. There's a calculation that the government does. So then those could potentially affect it. However, you have to run into that bridge when it comes there. You're currently able to put away $16,000 a year annually into this plan.
Okay, so it sounds like there actually is a way to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, how does someone, is there like, you have to sign up, or how does that part work?
Typically, just, you know, talking with your financial advisor.
Oh.
Banks aren't really offering it yet, but it's something you really do with financial advisors. It's, like I said, it's a great tool, especially if you have kids that have a disability. It's a great way for planning ahead for future costs, being able to invest that money. You know, let's just say if someone in the, you know, in this example was maxing out at $16,000, you know, depending on the type of investment choice that you have, you can see that easily growing to $500,000, maybe $1 million, you know, a 20, 30 year period.
Okay. And then another question about what is the best way to save or invest for the purpose of supporting elderly family? So I know you said Obama had something for, you know, special needs kids. Mm-hmm. Is there anything or any programs out there set aside for just like elderly family members who may not be able to take care of themselves, or, you know what I mean? Stuff like that.
There are a couple different things. Once you reach to that point, it's kind of a little bit too late.
Okay.
And it sounds crazy, but one thing that I always recommend to my clients, especially as we get to about 40 or 50, and that's long-term care insurance. And that's you're able to get that sometimes through whoever your insurance provider is. Mm-hmm. I actually offer that. It's something that you are able to be able to pay for future cost.
Okay.
So it's similar to like a disability insurance or a life insurance. You have a set amount that the insurance is saying that they are willing to pay to you once you reach a certain age. If you have future assisted living costs, or we have to go into independent living or any type of home. And that is going to be wonderful because, you know, let's just say for an example, if you have a policy where you get $4,000 of benefit monthly, which will be tax-free. So that's also a great thing. When you pay for your insurance, it's typically tax-free.
Okay.
But just going back to that example, if you're having $4,000 a month in long-term care benefits, that's basically saying the insurance company will pay out $4,000 a month before you happen to touch your money. And that's going to be great because what happens is, and what most people don't realize, once you get to those later years and you have to maybe, let's say we have to move into an assisted living facility or a independent care, you have to usually liquidate your assets.
Really?
Yeah, because it's very expensive. I used to work for a retirement home part-time. Those rooms, $250,000, $300,000 easily.
Really?
And we're not, and that's just a deposit. We're not even talking about the monthly costs. So that's the reason why when you see a lot of individuals when they get to their 70s, 80s, 90s, when they're moving into these homes, they have to liquidate their assets. So you're really having to spend all the money that you built up. Mm-hmm. But from a planning aspect, if you were able to, from a risk management standpoint, have those protections in place,
you'd be all right.
You'd be all right. And you don't have to liquidate your assets.
Huh. That I had no idea. I didn't know. I mean, I knew that those assisted living homes cost money because it's a business. You got to make money. But I didn't know it cost that much money. So speaking of life insurance, one of the questions was, how do I get the type of life insurance I can borrow against later and make money off of it?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about with my clients. Life insurance is important. One thing is guaranteed when we're born, and that is we are going to die.
Right.
And if you are over the age of 18, you are responsible. So you need to be planning for that because you know it's going to come. Mm-hmm. And with life insurance, you usually have two different type of policies. You have term insurance and you have permanent insurance, or sometimes known as whole life.
Okay.
Think of term insurance like renting, and or permanent insurance like owning.
Okay.
Renting, you're just constantly paying, but you're not building up any equity. So it's similar to your car insurance. You pay each month, and the only time you get that benefit is when you make a claim, and when we make that claim is usually at our death. It is at our death.
Yeah.
But with whole life or permanent life, that is where you can build up what they call accumulated value. And this has been something that has actually been going around for years. It is actually where a lot of your high value network individuals put their money towards, because the beautiful thing about life insurance is not taxable. And then also when you build up that accumulated value, now it's more expensive than term insurance because you're building up that accumulated value, and typically is after years 10 through 15 is where you really see the most value, and you're building things up in your portfolio because it's a tangible asset, so it's on your balance sheet. So you're able to you're actually able to grow it, and depending on who you get that policy through, because this is also important, all life insurance companies are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
You have different ones that are in different financial positions. The accumulated value is what you can utilize. It's basically something that you can access in your whole life.
Okay.
And if structured right, you can actually access those funds tax-free.
Okay, wait. Because you're blowing my mind over here. So the type of insurance that they were asking about is the whole life insurance. Mm-hmm. And you're saying you're paying into it. And so it's functioned similar to a house, right? Mm-hmm. So you're paying into this house, you pay your mortgage every month,
mm-hmm.
and it adds value as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you are getting ready to, I guess, take out of the account or sell the house, in this example, then you'll have a lump of cash in there? Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, you'll have cash in there. And so the thing that I always like to advise my client is, once you establish that, you don't want to surrender it.
Okay.
You want it to build up, because in the later years, especially, you know, let's just say for an example, you are 25 years old,
mm-hmm.
and you are putting, from a holistic standpoint, let's just say $500 a month.
Okay.
$600 a year into it. Once you get, you know, as I said, again, 25, once you get about 55, 60, literally, you know, depending on the insurance company, every dollar that you're putting in, you're probably getting $3 or $4 back. That's 300-400% return. You're not going to get that in the market.
Okay, so let's do ballpark so that, you know, our listeners can kind of have an idea of how this works. So you're 25, and let's say you out of college and you are financially stable enough because you set a budget,
mm-hmm.
and you can put $500 a month towards this whole life insurance. Mm-hmm. When you are, I don't know, 55, and you have kids and they're all grown and they want to buy a house, how much do you estimate you might have at that point?
Great question. So it really depends on the numbers, depends on the dividend, because that's how cash value grows, based off the company's dividend.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in a 20-year period, you can probably, $500 a month, you can easily have about between $150,000 $200,000.
Hmm.
You probably only contribute probably $80,000 or $90,000. So you have about close to probably $100,000 of growth. But probably during that time, me and the client will have discussions, because at that point, every dollar that they're putting in, if their account is growing by $300, $400, $500,
mm-hmm.
$300, $400, $500%, do we really want to touch that money?
Right.
Because if we touch it, it's going to affect that growth. And at that point, me and the client will have to have that conversation. Like, maybe let's look at other ways of financing. Maybe we go through the traditional bank, or maybe we use your cash value as collateral. That's also another great thing about the accumulated value life insurance, is you can actually use it as collateral if you wanted to go take out a loan somewhere.
Okay, so explain that to me. How does one use your life, your insurance policy as collateral to go take out a loan for literally anything?
Depending on, it's just same as a secure collateral, it's your accumulated value. So your accumulated value can never decrease when it's there.
Okay.
So let's just say, for an example, at 25 years old, we got $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, at 40 years old, we got
$25,000. Okay.
At 50 years old, it's not going to go lower than that.
Right.
It's always going to, more likely, it's going to grow. During the later years, you see a lot of growth. But I would probably say, to answer your question, it really depends on the situation.
Okay.
Just because every situation is different. Now, you can utilize it. If it makes sense for us to utilize it, that's good. Another great strategy behind having the accumulated cash value is it actually protects you against your market-based investments. So permanent life insurance is not factor in. It doesn't have any market volatility. It's not contingent based on the market.
So can you explain what that means for those who may not be as financially savvy? So in layman's terms, what does that mean?
Well, basically, you don't have to deal with the market volatility. So
okay.
It's not tied to the stock market. So stocks, bonds, EFTs, mutual funds,
mm-hmm.
those are market-based securities. Your cash value life insurance isn't.
Okay.
It's not tied to the market.
So it's going to do whatever it's going to do regardless of what the stock market is doing.
Yes, but it's also dependent on whatever the company's dividend rate is paying.
Okay.
So you have some companies over the last 20 years that average out a dividend 5 to 6%.
That's good.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, because think of your cash value life insurance as the new fixed income.
Okay.
Just because fixed income right now, bond prices aren't paying anything. You might get 2% return, you mm-hmm. know, but after taxes and fees, that's like 1.5%.
So it's kind of like a savings account that, you know, because there's some savings accounts that gives you a percentage just for having money in there in general. Is mm-hmm. that kind of how that operates?
Sort yeah, of? You'll build up a balance. So a lot of, you know, just saying if a policy has a dividend rate of 5%, mm-hmm. it's growing. And typically it's going to be more interest than banks are paying because banks aren't paying anything.
Right.
You know, so on that point, you really only want to have at least 3 to 6 months cash in your bank. Anything after that, is you're kind of losing money.
Oh.
Because of inflation.
Okay.
You know, inflation over the last year has been 5-6%. So that basically means, for people out there who are not familiar with inflation, that basically means your purchasing power. Things cost 5 or 6% more than what it did last year this time.
Yes, that has been a hot topic lately.
So when it comes to your investments, that's what you want to at least, that should be your benchmark, is that we want to make at least enough where we're beating inflation.
Okay.
And typical inflation, you know, the average inflation is usually 2.5%, maybe 3%. This year has been, you know, over the last year has been really high, but typically it's 2.5-3%.
Okay. So going back to the whole life insurance, why is it that nobody knows about this? Because I feel like looking back and talking to some of my peers who may look different than me, having the, you know, I've talked to people who said, my parents gave me X amount of dollars towards a down payment on my first home, or my parents gave me this money and that money. So now I'm curious, like, is that where that came from?
Yeah.
This whole time I thought it was coming from their bank accounts, which it could very well be.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I know that there is a life insurance policy out there that you could essentially use like a savings account or mm-hmm. checking account or whatever, and it grows as time goes on, and you could then take money from it and give it to your kids or use it for yourself. Why does no one know about this?
Really, it's because you're referring to our community, financial literacy really wasn't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the permanent life insurance, or whole life insurance, is really known as the rich man's Roth.
Ah, okay.
So, a lot of your, like I said, a lot of your higher value individuals, network individuals, making maybe $500,000, $1 million a year, or even billions, they utilize cash value life insurance as an investing tool, because if structured right, you'll never pay taxes on it to withdraw that money. And then also, life insurance isn't taxable.
Oh.
So it carries twofold. So your beneficiary gets you, I mean, basically it's passed down something, which is important.
Mm-hmm.
We have this notion in our community that we just want enough to get, you know, the barriers. And that is a horrible, in my personal opinion, way to think of things. Just because you should be wanting to put your, if we're talking about kids, in a better position.
Mm-hmm.
You want to give them a leg up. Life insurance is a great way to create generational wealth, and it also creates healthy habits, just because you know you're going to die.
Right.
So why not be able to pass something back down to your descendant, but also at the same time be able to utilize it with whole life, and that accumulated value that you're able to access, you know, again, structure right, tax-free, and then it's actually liquid that you can utilize before retirement age. So I have a lot of clients that are probably going to retire between 50 and 55. Well, if you look at their retirement accounts, you know, rather if we're looking at a Roth IRA, traditional Roth IRA, mm-hmm. I mean, a traditional IRA, 401k, 403b, those typical plans you can't touch until you're 59 and a half without paying the penalty. So if we happen to want to retire before that, we want to make sure we had a strategy in place so we can draw income.
Oh, okay. So let me make sure I have this correct. So you're saying with the whole life, they can actually draw from that account, because if they're 55, then they can't tap into their other retirement accounts until they're 59.
Without paying a penalty.
Mm-hmm. So what they do is they tap into their whole life account to get them by for what, that 4 years until they're 59, mm-hmm. and then all the rest of their money comes in.
Yeah. At that point, we can look at withdrawing those funds without having the penalty. And then also, the great thing about accumulated value is just kind of using that same scenario. Let's just say if we're 65 years old,
mm-hmm.
and the market is down. You know, like for an example, when COVID had initially hit March 20, the market was down 30-40%. If you never really want to sell at a loss.
Right.
So if you had a great, if you had a strategy in place, let's just say we retired during that year. Hey, market's down 30%. Okay, don't worry about touching your securities. We're going to give the market a chance to rebound. So usually rebounds within 12 to 15 months. You know, two years really at the longest. So at that point, if you had a great strategy, you had a strategy in place, you will probably withdraw some of the income from your accumulated value life insurance and just live off that for the year or once the market rebounds. You know, Warren Buffett has two rules that I think are very amazing. The first rule is never sell at a loss. The second rule is listen to rule one. And, you know, if you have a strategy behind that, like, and that kind of goes back to where I was saying, it actually protects you against your market-based securities. And then also in your retirement years, it allows you to still be investing aggressively. And what I mean by that is as you get older, people typically don't want to have as much risk, as much volatility. So they happen to usually sell their equities for fixed income, which if you, when you do that, you're typically going to have a lower rate of return. But if you have a great strategy in there, and if, especially if you have accumulated value and you've been contributing to it for a while and you have a nice balance build up, we can really be aggressively. We can go against the norm and we can still chase those 7, 8, 9, 10% returns in our later retirement years, at 65, 66, where other people are probably making more conservative investment choices if they don't have a strategy behind, and especially if all their assets are in market-based securities.
I wish we as a community wouldn't be able to know that, because someone passes away, then we got to do like a GoFundMe or fish plates or, you know, stuff like that. So as we're winding down the show, unfortunately, so I'm going to have you back next month, because I didn't even get to half the questions that I wanted to ask. And I know there's so much more information. This might be a three-part. I don't know. So much more information that I think is important for us to know. But I did want to ask, how do we get this information into our communities more? Because, you know, we can get on platforms like this, which is awesome. But I think as a whole, there's still a lot of us or people in general that have no idea that something like whole life insurance exists, or they don't have insurance at all. So what do you think that we could do to kind of get more education out there so that we're not having to do GoFundMes when somebody passes away?
That's a great question. First off, accountability. We are in 2022. We have access to information that our parents and our grandparents did not have. So there has to be some form of accountability that you have to have, even though if you did grow up in a household where financial literacy wasn't talked about. You know the importance of having money and being able to have a nice savings and have a nice diversified portfolio. So like again, say first is accountability. The second thing is going out there, Google, YouTube. And those are actually some great sources to really find information. Now, of course, you got to be careful on everything that you read, but you can pretty much find anything on Google or either YouTube and just kind of go out there and learn. Do your own self-investigating. And then also, money's emotional. You know, that's one thing I've come to find out is it's tied to our emotions. So a lot of times it may be important for you to reach out and talk to a financial advisor. You don't have to do it by yourself. Utilize someone's expertise. It's kind of similar to when you go to the doctor. Do you self-diagnose yourself or do you give them the opportunity to tell you what's wrong?
Right.
So think of a financial advisor as your financial doctor.
Okay.
It's time for your financial checkup.
Listen, this has been a great, like I said, we're probably going to have to have you come back for 2-3 more times.
I'm here.
If anybody has any questions or if they need any more information, how can they contact you?
You can reach out to me. My number is 816-412-1489. You can also email me. My email is John, J-O-H-N, period, Welchen, W-E-L-C-H-E-N, at N as in Nancy, M as in Mary, .com. Or you can reach visit my website at www.johnwelchen.com. period, N-M, com.
And say your number again for the people.
My phone number again is 816-412-1489.
Perfect. Well, I thank you again for being my guest. You have been listening to Next Step Forward, which is, again, a program that highlights millennials in the KC Metro that are using their talents, businesses, and activism to educate and uplift their communities. I have been your host, Jasmine Jones. We have been speaking with John Welchin, who has given us a lot of information. We'll probably have to have him back next month and the month after, so that we can get our monies in order.
Yes, I'm glad. I'm here to help. I want to be a resource and value to all you guys.
Appreciate that. Well, stay tuned at the top of the hour for the local showcase with various hosts.